This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today we're going to be talking about one of the most divisive and ugliest issues in American society. That's the treatment of immigrants from Mexico and other parts of Latin America when they come over the border here. With me to discuss this issue are two activists who spend a lot of time on this issue in the Tucson area, Lila Pine and Craig McComb. Welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you.
Matt, it's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure having you. I'm interested in how both of you, who spend half your time here in Madison, Wisconsin, where the show is taped, got interested in this issue and decided to go down there and do something about it. Lila, why don't you start?
Well, I'm a first-generation American. My parents were immigrants. I adopted my children in Bogota, Colombia. My children are immigrants, although they became U.S. citizens.
And where are your parents from?
Russia. And I don't mean the Soviet Union. They were elderly, you know, they were fairly old when they had me. So we're talking about pre-revolution Russia.
And so you have an affinity for immigrant issues from
yes,
birth.
Yes, yeah, pretty much. Although I wasn't, you know, really conscious of it all until, I guess, the Solidarity movement and the sanctuary movement of the 1980s, when I started becoming really aware of what North America, what the U.S. is doing to the rest of the Americas, the rest of the continent. And I got involved at the beginning early with the Columbia Support Network just to allow my kids, who were little kids back then, to be around other Colombians, and of course got very quickly educated about what the U.S. government's doing in Colombia. And about 12 or 13 years ago, I was with a bunch of people in town in Madison, creating the Interfaith Coalition for Worker Justice chapter here in Madison, and I chaired their Latino Workers Project. That was about 2 years of research and door-to-door surveys in Latino neighborhoods about how Latino immigrants or any immigrants in Madison and in Dane County were being treated at work by their employers. We found enormous abuse and exploitation. We had a 28-page report published 2 years later, and then shortly after that, that led to the creation of the Workers' Rights Center in Madison, which is bilingual.
Hmm. And so going down there then is a continuity. I see continuity in labor issues. I see continuity with immigrant issues, too. Craig, I want to get from you where your participation began here.
Well, I also have two foreign-born children, naturalized Koreans, but I come to this issue rather late in life. Lila is a long-term activist, but when we instantly decided to spend a large part of our time in Tucson, because Tucson seemed like a nice place, you can't be there very long before you discover that immigration is a major issue in that neighborhood.
What's been your reaction, Craig, to the Arizona law, for instance?
That's complicated. To a great extent, it grows out of local politics in Arizona. Just a little factoid, Arizona has 17 counties, and 60% of the population lives in one of them, Maricopa County, which is Phoenix. And the people behind this law are basically Phoenix politicians in the Arizona legislature who seem to get a lot of political mileage out of spreading fear about immigrants in the community. Not only them, of course, the notorious sheriff there is in on it too. I'm not sure that they ever expected that it would go this far. They have tried several times before to pass a similar law, and it had been repeatedly vetoed by Governor Napolitano, who isn't there anymore and was replaced by a Republican. And suddenly, gee whiz, here it is, passed and signed.
You know, the amazing thing, we ran a cover story in Progressive Magazine on this issue a couple months back. Amazing thing to me was from our subscribers, there was a real split. I was struck by how many subscribers to the Progressive Magazine accepted as truth and as valid the claims of the anti-immigrant crowd. Some of these people were from Arizona and said, you know, it's easy for you out in Madison, Wisconsin to say, you know, this is a racist law and people should boycott Arizona. But if you lived here, you would know why the law was passed because there's all this crime coming over. And
yeah.
How do you respond to that law?
There's an enormous number of myths out there about immigration. And over the last 3 to 5 years, as the corporations that profit from this, corporations like the Corrections Corporation of America, CCA, which has found very lucrative contracts with the federal government in building and then managing privately for-profit immigration detention centers, which, you know, really in many cases are more like internment camps, and that's not an exaggeration. You know, CCA was a major promoter and funder of SB 1070 in Arizona. And, you know, so there's these private corporate interests, there's the right-wing politicians, there are the KKK and the neo-Nazi groups and other white supremacist groups and vigilantes, all of which have grown astronomically, you know, in the last 5 years, pushing, you know, all their hate and their lies about immigrants onto, you know, Latino immigrants, almost to the point of that replacing their hatred and violence toward African Americans or Jews, American Jews. Basically, there's this mythology that links all the drug cartels and drug dealers in Mexico with these immigrants who are, you know, 99% of whom are very honest, hardworking, church-going family people who simply can't stand idly by while their children and their families literally starve to death. And that's a whole thing going back to NAFTA and other U.S. foreign policies, especially foreign trade policies, that have devastated Mexico, Guatemala, and much of the Americas, and resulted in the takeover of all their farms by U.S. Agribusiness and U.S. banks taking over Mexican banks, so that we've basically wiped out all their jobs. And as long as we don't change NAFTA, they are going to continue to come. I just would say that also President Clinton knew that the passage of NAFTA, which he fully promoted and supported, would push these people up across our borders. And so he was the very first one who set the policy of building walls and militarizing the border. The more you militarize a border, the harder it is for the lower-level drug dealers to come through. And so what happened is that escalated the violence by pushing the drug business into the hands of Mexican mafia and cartels, who, instead of sending teenagers across with small quantities of cocaine or marijuana, are now coming through with machine guns. And it's just like Martin Luther King said, violence begets violence. The more we militarize the border, the more violence we are creating in Mexico. And I should also say that Mexico, all of the violence really related to drug dealers has nothing whatsoever to do with the immigrants coming here for jobs. There have been numerous reports that they are 4 times less likely to have committed any crime or even misdemeanor than the average U.S. citizen per capita. So there's this whole mythology tying those two together, and unfortunately, the mainstream corporate news media are playing on that, and that's where the misinformation is coming from.
I might throw out another little fact.
Please do, Craig.
About the mythology that all this is breeding a huge amount of crime in the state of Arizona, which is basically not true. I take a look at crime statistics. Crimes against people, you know, murders, assaults, and so forth, you're safer in Phoenix than you are in Milwaukee or Chicago.
But those aren't the safest places in the world either.
Well, no, but it's a typical big city. It's not something really unusual. And the border counties, the counties that actually are down on the Mexican border, are very peaceful places. There was a murder, you recall, down in Cochise County on the border, what must be a couple months ago now. Got a lot of national press. A rancher was killed. That was the first murder in Cochise County for 10 years.
Didn't know that.
And actually, as they subsequently investigated that murder, the initial thought, oh, this was done by undocumented immigrants, does not seem to be the case. So a lot of this notion of violent crime is trumped up stuff.
I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor of The Progressive Magazine. You're listening to Progressive Radio. My guests today, Craig McComb and Lila Pine. Another argument against immigration is that these immigrants are taking our jobs. I mean, you hear that all the time. Either one of you want to take that?
Yeah. First of all, most of the jobs they are taking are 15 hours a day in stoop labor out on farms harvesting crops. I have personally talked to farmers around the country and ranchers in Arizona who say that they've tried offering those jobs with higher wages to Americans, and even if it's $10, $12 an hour, no U.S. citizens are taking these jobs. There are many other kinds of jobs, of course, in restaurants and fast food and hotel industry, et cetera, construction, that do sometimes attract Americans. But Rich Trumka, the president of the AFL-CIO, made a speech to a union convention where he said that the main thing that is taking U.S. jobs are the big corporations that are moving their businesses around the world to the other side of the world. He said something to the effect of, is it undocumented immigrants? Is it immigrants who are forcing your jobs overseas? No. Is it immigrants who are laying off thousands and thousands of Americans right now due to the economy? No. And he went on and on talking about how U.S. labor must not fall into scapegoating immigrants, that immigrants built this country, immigrants built the U.S. labor movement for that matter, and they are our future. And, unless they have a criminal record that is a threat to this country, they should be given the opportunity to get a legal visa, an opportunity that's denied to them now.
There's an excellent book out, They Take Our Jobs and Other Myths About Immigrants, written by Avi Chomsky. And in fact, Avi was down in Tucson this last spring. We had a chance to meet her.
She's Noam Chomsky's daughter.
Yes, but she's a significant academic in her own right, professor of history at Salem State University in Massachusetts. But she had taught about Latin American history in the border for a number of years, had never visited the border, and came down during spring break this year, and volunteered, along with No More Deaths, as we do, and spent time in Nogales talking to deportees from the United States.
Craig McComb, you mentioned this group, No More Deaths. Explain what it is.
No More Deaths is an interfaith organization, volunteer organization based in Tucson, Arizona, and their objective is to reduce or to eliminate, hopefully, death and abuse by immigrants crossing the border. Their most well-known activity is to have camps out in the desert to provide food, water, and medical aid to immigrants crossing from Mexico.
Lila, how many people die crossing the border?
We don't really actually know exactly because the desert by the border is so vast and enormous that it will be years before we find all the bodies. But based on the coroner's reports from the border counties, Cochise County and Pima County and others in southern Arizona, we know of at least 5,600 men, women, and children who have died trying to cross the border.
In over what period of time?
Over the last 9 or 10 years.
And what's it been like the last year or so?
This past year has been hotter and more extreme than usual. And starting in the fall, we noticed a record high number of bodies being found. And this summer in particular, it's an all-time record high of bodies being found out there. And it's interesting, as the number of immigrants coming into this country has gone down over the last 2 years due to our economy, they have no reason to come here if they can't find a job here. As the number of immigrants crossing over has gone down, the number of deaths and dead bodies has gone up. The U.S. government under Clinton started building these walls and deliberately funneling all immigrants through the most treacherous, deadly parts of the desert, the Sonoran Desert in Arizona. And that funneling effect was very deliberate, and they called the deaths, increasing the deaths deliberately on the part of the U.S. government through, you know, heat stroke and dehydration and hyperthermia. They refer to that as their deterrence policy. So it's deterrence by death, which has just been declared as a human rights abuse by the Organization of American States. And, you know, the United Nations is getting more involved. And a number of human rights and humanitarian aid groups along the border are putting out reports. No More Deaths was the first group to put out a report documenting 345 human rights abuses by Border Patrol agents against immigrants coming through just the Tucson sector of Border Patrol in
Arizona. What are those
Arizona.
Abuses? What kind of abuses?
Well, it ranges from... you have to understand, when these folks are put in the immigration detention centers, they've just been picked up in the desert after walking around on foot for 4 or 5 days in perhaps 120-degree heat with only 1 gallon of water, which you easily drink up in the first 5 hours. You lose at least a gallon and a half of water through sweating each day in the desert, and much more than that if it's in the summer. So these folks come and are picked up usually with severe blisters on their feet, so they can hardly even stand up, let alone walk. They come severely dehydrated. They haven't eaten or drunk anything in 4 days, and they badly need food, water, and medical care. They are, for the first 72 hours in the short-term detention centers, they are denied food, water, or any medical care. Their possessions are taken away from them, and if they ask to have their inhaler back for asthma or pills for, you know, heart disease or whatever, they're refused.
I mean, you're a former attorney, or maybe a current attorney, for all I know.
Retired.
On what basis are they allowed to deprive people in detention of food and water?
They are not. They are not allowed that. But we did discover that there are no written custody standards for Border Patrol agents. And by the way, in the last 10 years, we've gone from about 3,000 Border Patrol agents up to 20,000. And they still have no written custody standards they must abide by, and no one to hold them accountable to anyone for basic human rights. No more deaths after issuing its report, which is called Crossing the Line, which we feel that Border Patrol has been doing, going way over the line in terms of human rights abuses. And people can find that on nomoredeaths.org on their website. We've found that there were no standards, so we have drafted a set of ideal custody standards. And we got Congressman Luis Gutierrez of Illinois to introduce our basic custody standards for short-term facilities and Amnesty International and other groups' standards for changing the custody standards for long-term immigration centers. And, you know, if that bill had made it through, we were hopeful that those standards would be addressed. We're now trying to address them in other ways through administrative changes, you know, administrative rules.
Is the Obama administration doing anything better on this?
Not that we can tell on the ground. No More Deaths and their allies, and there are a number along the border, have been in conversation with the Department of Homeland Security. Surprisingly, they have a little division of civil liberties and civil rights. We are in discussion with them about reporting specific abuses, but so far it's very hard to see any change on the ground.
I'm speaking with Craig McComb and Lila Pine, who are doing some human rights work down on the border. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine. You're listening to Progressive Radio. Craig, you had mentioned, both of you actually had mentioned working with No More Deaths. I understand that there was a that there was prosecution of one volunteer who was simply trying to leave water out in the desert for these poor people who are coming across and who are dying of thirst. What's going on with that? And is that still policy that it's illegal to provide food and water for people if they're coming across?
Well, you can imagine if DHS has a policy of deterrence, which translates to making these people as miserable as possible, they're not too delighted with volunteer groups who come out and work in the opposite direction. So, yes, some of our people have been ticketed, particularly in there's a National Wildlife Reserve on the border, the Buenos Aires Reserve, where we had been doing water drops. There are a number of trails where the migrants come through. Our people were ticketed. A couple of them dug their heels in, refused to pay the tickets, went to court. Were convicted in court of intentional littering, which you'd be surprised carries jail time and substantial.
But that's a joke. I mean, it wasn't littering.
It wasn't littering. They were putting out water, and in fact, they were picking up empty waters at the time. It was appealed. It was overturned in the Ninth Circuit. So we are continuing in conversation with the Wildlife Reserve people to have some way to put water out there, and they're at least talking to us.
Bird watchers. I'm a bird watcher, so they're liable to be good people. I've actually been down at the wildlife refuge. But, you know, what I haven't done, Lila Pine, is go down there and protest, which I'm anxious to do at some point. And you were just there recently. Tell me about that. At a protest, it must have been around the time that the judge ruled part of SB 1070 illegal or unconstitutional.
Yeah, yes. The protests were in Phoenix and Tucson. I was in Phoenix at the time. It was July 28th through 31st, but mainly it was a national day of resistance against SB 1070, the Arizona state bill that legalizes racial profiling and raids and warrantless searches of immigrants' homes. And in Phoenix, which is the state capitol and also where Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio is headquartered. We had announced that we were having this National Day of Resistance on July 29th because that's the day that the law was to take effect. And Joe Arpaio had announced, and, you know, he's a real media hound. He just loves TV coverage. He had announced that he was going to do some raids and traffic sweeps, as he calls them, through Latino neighborhoods, through the barrios in and around Phoenix on that day. So one of our goals at this protest was to stop him from being successful in rounding up Latinos. And, of course, many of the people he rounds up are U.S. citizens. Or are here legally, either legal residents or have legal visas that have not expired. Some have visas that did expire, but they round them all up with these specious traffic stops for things like, you know, a broken taillight or the tint in your tinted windows in your car is too dark. And usually when he's done these sweeps, he's picked up, you know, his deputies have picked up, I don't know, several hundred Latinos. This time we both did civil disobedience, blocking the entry to the jail, the car entry, the garage to the jail. With a human chain, and 83 people were arrested that day, and we've kept the deputies too busy with us and kept their jails too filled with our people for them to go out and do the sweeps. The next day, I went out with a group called Phoenix Cop Watch that does legal observing with video cameras. And it was very interesting. Every time we'd pull up behind a deputy's car and some Latino he'd pulled over, the deputy would get back in his car and leave without ticketing because they know it wouldn't stand up in court. So that was a real educational thing about how to prevent or minimize police misconduct or police brutality.
Craig McComb, we only have about 30 seconds left. I was wondering what groups you would send people to, what resources people would go to on the web if they wanted to participate in this important civil rights movement.
I'd say the primary resource for activism on the border would be www.nomoredeaths, all one word, .org. It's quite an extensive site, and they will point you at other sites. Lila, what about Cop Watch?
Yeah, it's Phoenix Cop Watch. If you Google Phoenix Cop Watch, I think it's .org, but you'll find their website. And they were interested in helping train people to set up Cop Watch organizations in their cities, too.
Well, great. Those are two good groups that if you've been listening to the show, you could go visit on the web and try to help out. I want to thank my guests, Lila Pine and Craig McComb, for being with me today on Progressive Radio.
It's a pleasure, Matt.
Thank you.
Pleasure was mine. Thanks very much.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.